Salutations, friends, and welcome to another hour of wonderful entertainment as we hearken back to the golden age of radio. I'm your host, Corey Walker, and I invite you to gather with me around the old part of radio. 4 weeks left, including this week, before new host James Colton from Yarmouth, Maine, takes over the program. Since I want to end on a bang, I'm trying to feature some series I either haven't played before or haven't played in a while. First up is Bulldog Drummond, a detective series which ran from April 13, 1941 until January 12, 1949, and then again from January 3 to March 28, 1954. Both series aired on the Mutual Network. According to radio historian John Dunning, Bulldog Drummond was a B-grade detective on the screen and on the air. Today's episode is titled Dinner of Death and first aired on the evening of Monday, April 23rd, 1945. The episode doesn't give cast credits, but in this episode, Drummond is played by either Santos Ortega or Ned Weber. Louis Van Roten plays Drummond's sidekick, Denny. On with the show.
Out of the fog, out of the night, and into his American adventures comes Bulldog Drummond. To tell us about our newest adventure, here is Bulldog Drummond.
Before I begin, I'd like to ask a question. When you see a sign on the road that says danger ahead, do you go on regardless of the danger or proceed with care and caution? I ask this because there's a big sign on the economic road ahead of us, and it says inflation. That means we must proceed with care and caution to keep prices down. More and more people are making more money than ever before, and there are fewer things to spend it on. Therefore, if we outbid each other for what there is, we force prices up, the value of money decreases, and everybody suffers. But you can, you must, keep prices down. Buy only what you really need, and refuse to pay more than ceiling prices. Save. Save all the money you can in the form of war bonds. Do all you can to avoid the pitfalls of that danger sign that says inflation. And make every step you take a step closer to victory. Keep prices down. And now for the story I call Dinner of Death. It began when two men were arrested for hijacking trucks. They were known as Barnaby Mullins and Spike Saunders. Mullins, who was released on bail, visited the office of the district attorney.
Look, Mr. Mahoney, one of your assistants let me get this far, right into your private office. Will you listen to me for a couple of minutes?
I'm too busy, Mullins. In court next week, I'll give you all the time you need, you and your pal Spike Saunders.
Tell me something. How did you know where to pick me up?
The police have ways of knowing things like that.
What happened? Did Tommy Pepper turn stool pigeon?
Cut it, Mullins. You're doing Tommy Pepper an injustice. He's a good newspaper man, a crime reporter who hates rackets and loves to show them up.
Of course, I shouldn't talk that way about the celebrated racket buster, Tommy Pepper. Not the day before a big banquet in his honor. With you making the main speech of the evening.
Is that all you came here to say?
That's some of it. Is there anything special you'd like to hear?
Yes, there is. I'd like a full confession from you. It would save the state needless trial expense.
Confession?
Look, Mullins, I'm making no deals with you or with anyone else. Confess or get out of here and take your chances in court.
Okay. But before I start to talk, will you do me one favor?
Name it.
I got a few little business details to clean up before I start living on the state. Will you fix it to continue my bail for 48 hours?
All right, Barnaby. You can have until the day after tomorrow at 9 a.m. Now, suppose you start talking.
This is insufferable.
Oh, come now, Denny. You've been moaning all the way to this hotel. What in the world is the matter with you?
Well, if you must know, Captain Drummond, it's my feet. We've been tramping about all day, and now a banquet. I've been hoping to rest this evening, sir.
Denny, this banquet is the event of the season. As visitors to the city, we're extremely fortunate to be invited.
Yes, I understand that, sir, but my feet.
Oh, come on, forget your feet. I'm interested in the fabulous Tommy Pepper and his work in exposing rackets. I've always wanted to meet him again.
Why, I wasn't aware that you even knew him, sir.
Well, I don't really, but watch it, Denny. Here he is.
Hello. Captain Drummond, right?
Yes, Mr. Pepper. We met some years ago.
Don't tell me. I'll get it. At the Blackfriars Club, 1938, right?
Right again. You have a remarkable memory.
Well, I never forget a face. I don't dare. It might be a guy just out of prison who had spent 10 years remembering I sent him there.
Well, sorry, I can't oblige you there. Oh, pardon me. Tommy Pepper, this is Denny.
Hiya, Denny.
Very well, thank you, sir.
Well, gentlemen, before we brave the mob in a banquet hall, how about the special private room? There are some hors d'oeuvres and a row of bottles. Will you join me?
Well, thank you, Mr. Pepper.
Shorten that to Tommy, will you?
Good heavens, sir. There's a weird-looking chap following us, an enormous, hulking fellow.
Yes, Denny, that's Dodo. And he is following us, or rather me. That's his job.
Dodo? Is that his name?
Sure. Dodo, come here.
Oh, yeah.
Dodo, meet some friends of mine, Captain Drummond and Denny.
Friends?
Yes, Dodo. Friends.
Oh. Hello.
Hello there.
All right, Dodo. Stay close behind us.
You said that Dodo's job was following you, Mr. Pepper?
Yeah, that's right. He's not much to look at or talk to, but he's aces as a bodyguard. To date, I owe him 8 lives.
My word, is there that much risk in writing about rackets?
Constantly. And monotonously. Even tonight, some thoughtful soul telephoned me to say I'd die before the evening was finished. Well, here we are. And there's our distinguished DA studying his speech. Hiya, Mahoney.
Hello, Tommy. Well, hello, Captain Drummond and Denny. Nice of you to come to the banquet.
We're very glad to be here.
How about a preview of your speech, Mahoney? It'll save me from blushing when I hear it.
Not a chance, Tommy. The speech goes back in the pocket. I'm not going to spoil a surprise.
Oh, now I know I need a drink.
What do you have, Jenny?
Bourbon for me, Drummond.
Oh, dry sherry, please.
Dry sherry, sir.
You, Denny?
The same, sir. There you are. You, Mr. Mahoney?
Kimmel, right, Mahoney?
Right. A pony of Kimmel. You never forget anything, do you, Tommy?
Well, allow me. To tonight's guest of honor, Tommy Pepper. May you prosper.
Thanks, Drummond.
Here's how.
Bourbon hits the spot. Well, let's get on to the banquet, shall we? What's the matter with Mahoney?
Mahoney, what's wrong?
I don't know.
Good heavens, he's fainted.
Mahoney. Mahoney.
Someone, we
got to do something. My word, sir. Now, Mr. Pepper has fallen too right across the body of the district attorney.
Help me lift him, Denny. A barman, don't let anyone touch those glasses.
Story continues in just a moment.
Oh.
back to Bulldog Drummond and the story he calls Dinner of Death. A hijacker known as Barnaby Mullins traded information with District Attorney Mahoney for 48 hours of freedom to clean up some unfinished business. The same night, Tommy Pepper, noted crime reporter, is to be guest of honor at a dinner. But after taking a drink, Tommy and the district attorney collapsed.
Keep up the first aid treatment, Denny. An ambulance will be here any moment.
Yes, sir. Mr. Pepper. He's coming too, Captain Drummond.
Good. I can't say as much for Mahoney.
No, sir. The DA is in bad shape.
Wait a moment, Barman. No, it's no use.
What do you mean?
There's no pulse, no breath. His heart stopped. The district attorney's dead.
Oh. Mr. Pepper's going to be all right, sir.
Tommy Pepper, can you hear me?
Drummond, what happened?
Someone must have poisoned your drinks. Lie still now. In a moment, we'll put you in an ambulance and take you to the hospital.
Mahoney, I saw him fall. Where is he?
He's dead.
Mahoney dead. Oh, it's terrible.
Who did it, Tommy? Do you know?
Might have been Barnaby Mullins or anybody. Lots of rats hated me and Mahoney.
Tell me, who is Barnaby Mullins, and why do you suspect him?
Well, it was Mullins on the phone today. He threatened me. I investigated his hijacking racket. Mahoney was to prosecute him next week.
I take it then he's out on bail. Where can I find him?
Well, he used to hide out at Cornwall Arms, apartment 4E.
Thanks. Denny and I'll go there at once.
Be careful. Mullins is tricky, dangerous, and desperate.
Here we are, Denny.
Yes, sir. Apartment 4E. Skeleton key, sir?
Try the door first.
Why, it was unlocked.
All right, inside.
You'd better be prepared. Mr. Pepper said this Mullins person was a desperado. Good heavens, look. It's the ape man.
Hello, Dodo.
Whoa.
Dodo, is Barnaby Mullins here?
Mullins in other room. You don't see.
In the other room. Thanks. This way, Denny.
This is fantastic, sir. Why is that creature here in the apartment of the man suspected of poisoning his master?
Open the door, Denny.
This is a light switch.
Well, that must have been Barnaby Mullins.
Hanged by the neck from an overhead pipe. Oh, dear. Hanged with his own belt, sir.
Dodo!
He's gone, sir. That explains that Dodo hanged Mullins for poisoning Tommy Pepper.
I doubt that, Denny. Dodo would have strangled Mullins. And notice the evidence here, that chair lying on the floor.
Oh, I see it now, sir. It was suicide. Mullins hanged himself.
Well, a closer inspection will show a flaw in that theory. How high would the seat of the chair be from the floor if the chair were upright?
Oh, about 2 feet, sir.
Now look at the body. How high off the floor are the feet?
The feet? Well, the toes are about 3.5 feet from the floor.
Mm-hmm. Then it would have been physically impossible for Mullins to have hanged himself.
Well, are you telephoning, sir?
Police headquarters, Denny.
Oh, yes.
Hello, police headquarters. This is Captain Drummond. Yes, I've just found Barnaby Mullins murdered in apartment 4E at the Cornwall Arms. That's right. What? I see. Well, thanks, I will.
But please, sir, you gave the police some information and apparently they gave you some.
They did, Denny. Mullins' partner, a person named Spike Saunders, shot his way out of jail 3 hours ago. He killed a guard. Let's be going.
Going, sir? Where?
To the hospital to see Tommy Pepper. If Spike Saunders is on the rampage, we must cover every angle.
Dislike to press a personal issue, sir, but my feet are killing me.
Yes, Denny, I know how you feel. I'm sorry we couldn't find a taxicab to bring us here to the hospital.
But it's impossible that this Spike Saunders would invade a place like this, especially with the police on his heels.
That shot seemed to come from Tommy Pepper's room. Hurry it up.
Yes, sir. The running is extremely difficult at this point, sir.
All right, here's the room.
Oh, dear. Mr. Pepper isn't here.
There's a terrace outside. Look out there.
I'm all right, Drummond.
What? Hey, word. He's under the bed.
Yes, but still alive.
Tommy, who fired that shot?
I don't know. I was dozing when I heard one of the French windows open. It squeaked. To me, that meant danger, so I dove under the bed.
Anything outside, Denny?
Yes, sir. This gun. Apparently, the assassin dropped it on the terrace as he ran away.
Hmm. Another narrow escape for you, Tommy.
I'm an old hand at narrow escapes, Drummond.
That may be, but I think you need a change of venue. There have been two poisonings. Barnaby Mullins has been hanged, and Spike Saunders has shot his way out of jail. Well,
thanks for catching me up on current events. So Saunders is on the loose, huh?
With the murder of a guard hanging over him.
Well, in that case, I think I'll move out of here. If you'll get me my clothes, Denny, they're in that closet over
Yes,
there.
Sir.
Oh, I'll get them, Denny. Here we are. Shoes, socks, underwear.
Let me help you with that hospital nightgown, Mr. Pepper.
Thanks, Denny.
Shirt, tie, trousers.
I have them, sir.
All right. Now, you can go along with Denny to our suite in the hotel. Meanwhile, I'll gather up the loose ends of the case. Here's your coat.
Thanks. You're not coming to the hotel, sir?
Not just now, Denny. There are a few details I want to clean up.
Well, Drummond, thanks for your help. I'll see you soon, I hope.
Yes, both of us will, sir.
Plaster on the wall is soft. The bullet didn't go far. Should be easy to dig it out. Peculiar angle of entrance. There we are.
Oh, pardon me, sir.
Why did you come back, Denny?
Well, Mr. Pepper considered himself far too capable to need a chaperone on his way to the hotel. He insisted that I come back here. He went on alone, so I gave him my key.
All right, we'll follow him in a few moments.
Yes, sir.
You see, I believe that Tommy Pepper will need not one chaperone, Denny, but two.
Yes, sir. I'll switch on the lights.
Well, we've had visitors.
My word, the room is wrecked.
Tommy? Tommy Pepper? He isn't here.
He's been kidnapped, sir. From the look of the room, there was a fierce struggle before someone overpowered him and carried him off.
Yes, it appears that way.
Please, sir, what do we do now?
At the moment, I believe we'll both raise our hands high.
What in the world are you talking about?
There's a man at the door, Denny, with a gun.
Good heavens, it's Dodo.
Well, Tommy Pepper.
That's what we'd like to know, Dodo.
Tell me, where's Tommy Pepper?
Oh, dear. Listen, Dodo, Mr. Pepper came here for safety, but someone must have kidnapped him.
Where's Tommy Pepper?
He doesn't believe me, sir. Now, see here, Mr. Dodo. Spike Saunders escaped from jail. Probably took Mr. Pepper away.
Spike Saunders free. Spike Saunders snatched Tommy Pepper. Dodo gets Spike Saunders.
Thank goodness he's putting away the gun.
Dodo, can you find Saunders?
Dodo followed Spike Saunders lots of times. He hired an call in a warehouse.
We'll go along with you to help you.
Dodo don't need help. Dodo go along.
My word, sir. You knocked him out.
Yes, Denny. Now you and I will visit the colony warehouse without a chaperone.
That bit of glass and reached through and fixed the burglar alarm just as you told me.
You should have been a burglar, Denny.
Well, thank you, sir. I'll raise the window.
Go on in.
My word, the warehouse is full.
Yes. I noticed the stencils on the cases, Denny. Hosiery, shoes, cigarettes, machine tools.
Canned goods. My word, this must be the loot of those hijackers, Mullins and Saunders.
Probably. Hold it.
Get him up.
No, dear.
It's Tommy Pepper. Tommy, it's Drummond, Denny.
Well, how'd you get here, Drummond? How'd you get in?
Oh, there are ways and means, Tommy.
Tell us about this warehouse.
Oh, it's a storage depot for hijacked civilian goods. Nothing but the best, of course. If you'll stay with me, I think we can grab the other member of the hijacking team. Spike Saunders is coming in.
My word, how do you know that?
I'm watching through a window. Just drove up outside in another car. Not the one he was using when he yanked me out of your hotel suite.
What happened to you there?
Well, I just got in when Saunders arrived. He slugged me and started to take me for a ride. It was my good luck that his car blew a tire. I was conscious by that time, so I got away.
You're lucky?
You're telling me. I wouldn't be alive today if I wasn't. Drummond, got a gun?
Not tonight.
Then lie low when the fireworks start. Saunders won't give up without a fight.
Perhaps you better give me your gun, Tommy. Taking a criminal into custody is more in my line than yours.
Oh, no, not tonight. I've been poisoned, shot at, and slugged, and I want revenge. Here he comes. Get him up, Saunders.
Well, so what happens to me? I run into Tommy Pepper and into dark.
That's right, Saunders, and my gun was up first, so walk in a straight line toward my flashlight and keep him up.
Sure, let's see your light. Oh, well, my finger must have slipped. Did it hurt you, Tommy?
Nice shooting, Spike. You shot the flashlight out of my hand. Now it's my turn.
Oh, no, you got me, a rat. Right in the bread basket.
All right, Tommy. You won your duel.
Yeah, I almost lost it. All right, Drummond, you can have my gun from here in. It's your show.
Thanks. It's my show until we get to police headquarters, where we'll book you for murder.
What are you saying?
Yes, sir. What are you saying?
Well, Denny, you see, this cycle of poisoning and murder began just after Barnaby Mullins made a sworn statement to the district attorney.
Well, I'm following you, sir. I merely want to get out my flashlight. I don't like this darkness.
Yeah, that's better. Your real talent, Tommy, was blackmail. You used the information you picked up about rackets to extort money from crooks. Will you confirm that?
Confirm nothing.
Denny.
Oh, I'm sorry, sir. He knocked the light out of my hand.
Drummond, you were too fast with your information. Now you haven't got a light. Making an arrest in the dark's pretty tough.
Where in the world is he, sir?
You forget, Tommy. I've got your gun. You're unarmed.
One correction, Drummond. I just picked up Saunders' gun. He won't need it anymore.
Hit the floor, Denny. Yes, sir.
One other little point, Drummond. My gun has only one cartridge left in it. There were two. I used one on Saunders. You've got just one shot to fire. I've got plenty in this gun.
Have you?
Oh. I missed you, huh? Why don't you try the one shot you've got, Drummond? You might make a bullseye by a miracle.
Please, sir, is he bluffing?
No, Denny. There's only one live cartridge left in his gun, in this gun, and Tommy's moving around in the dock.
Back to the climax of our story in just a moment. And now back to Bulldog Drummond in the Colony Warehouse. A depot for hijacked civilian goods, Drummond and Denny are peering into darkness. Drummond has one live cartridge in his gun. Tommy Pepper has more.
Come on, Drummond, why don't you shoot? You might hit me.
Of course, sir, it's none of my business, but do you think you might hit him?
As he said, Denny, I might score a bullseye by a miracle. I'm saving this last shot.
But what can we do, sir?
I think you'd better start creeping.
Creeping, sir? My feet are aching terribly.
Crawl, Denny, on your hands and knees. While I talk to Tommy, you'll know where he is by his voice.
Do you want me to find him, sir, and tackle him?
No, no. Get behind him. Those wooden cases are stacked high. Get behind a row of them.
Oh, I understand. Get behind a row of cases and behind him.
That's it. Get moving now. I'll make him talk so you can locate him in the dock.
And then a mighty heave-ho on the cases. Yes, I'll do my best, sir.
All right, Tommy. How about it? Tommy?
Yeah, Drummond? You ready to surrender?
Not yet. You've committed three murders. I don't intend to make a fourth at your little game.
Tell me something, Drummond. How did you know that I murdered Mullins? I was in the hospital when you found him.
You hanged him before you poisoned the bottle of Kimmel for Mahoney. And then you faked your own poisoning. And in the hospital, you fired a shot from your own gun into the wall.
You're quite intelligent, Drummond. How did you figure it out?
With your help, Tommy.
I didn't help you.
At the hospital, I got your clothes for you. The district attorney's speech was in your coat pocket. The speech you stole from him when you fell across him in the private room. It makes very interesting reading.
Keep talking, Drummond.
Gladly. From what Mullins told him, the DA knew the truth. He would have exposed you in his speech at the banquet.
All right, Drummond, now I know just where you are. That's all I wanted to know.
Hello! I did it, sir. He's pinned underneath those heavy cases, and I'm watching him very closely.
A nice piece of work, Denny. You deserve a rich reward.
Well, in that case, sir, there's something I'd like very much. Let's go home where I can take off my shoes.
Now, here is Bulldog Drummond to tell us about next week's story.
At a carnival, a gypsy fortune teller predicts Denny's future. She foretells a night of dire happenings, and before morning, her prophecy comes true. Denny and I meet some interesting people: a sideshow ticket taker, a famous performer on the high trapeze, and two corpses which refuse to lie still. A mad killer lurks in the background. I call the story Murder Carnival. Be sure to listen, won't you?
And so, into the night, walks Bulldog Drummond, seeking new adventure and excitement. The next adventure with Bulldog Drummond will be heard over most of these stations next week at the same time. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
Well, what did you think of that episode? The story was called Dinner of Death and was from the series Bulldog Drummond. The story first aired on Monday, April 23rd, 1945 on the Mutual Broadcasting Network. I've never played anything from that series before, but I hope you enjoyed it. Next up, a series more familiar to you, but one that I haven't featured in some time. Dragnet was a police drama series known for its strict attention to details and unprecedented realism. It was created and produced by Jack Webb, who also starred as Detective Sergeant Joe Friday, the lead character of the program. It ran on NBC from June 3, 1949 until February 26, 1957, and later aired on television in two separate series, a black and white series in the 1950s and a color series in 1967 and 1970. The cases featured in Dragnet were taken from the files of the Los Angeles Police Department, and each episode was so accurate that even the steps you heard on the radio from one room to another were the same number of steps it took to make the same journey in real life. Today's episode is titled Big Want Ad and was first heard at 9 p.m. on Thursday, October 4, 1951. Barton Yarborough starred as Fry's partner, Sergeant Ben Romero. Let's go catch us a bad guy.
The story you are about to hear is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent. You're a detective.
detective sergeant. You're assigned to auto theft detail. A gang of criminals masquerading as legitimate auto dealers start to work in your city. Innocent people are cheated out of thousands of dollars. The thieves are clever. They work a foolproof formula. Your job? Stop them.
Dragnet, the documented drama of an actual crime. For the next 30 minutes, in cooperation with the Los Angeles Police Department, you will travel step by step on the side of the law through an actual case transcribed from official police files. From beginning to end, from crime to punishment, Dragnet is the story of your police force in action.
It was Tuesday, February 19th. It was chilly in Los Angeles. We were working the day watch out of auto theft. My partner's Ben Romero. The boss is Captain Nelson. My name's Friday. We were on the way out from the office, and it was 10:25 a.m. when we got to the corner of 38th Street and Maxbury Avenue. The Greenleaf Day Nursery School.
Mrs. Palmer, is that right?
Yeah, I think so. Just a minute. I've got it written down. Yeah.
Excuse me, ma'am. Look at the
police.
Police, ma'am. Martin, ma'am.
Oh, yeah, Tom. Going to get all about it. Is that it?
Yes, ma'am. We've been handling similar complaints the last month or so. We'd like to have you tell us everything that happened in your case, if you would, please.
One of the most underhanded things I've ever heard of, Sergeant. It would have been the same thing if he'd held me up with a gun. Just out-and-out robbery.
Well, could you give us some of the details, ma'am? How you were first approached on the deal?
Excuse me a minute, please. Children, time to go inside now. We're going to color pictures with the crayons this morning. Mrs. Johnson has them all ready for you inside. Bruce, Michael, Sandra, go along now. Inside, everyone. Certainly wish the warm weather to hurry up and come. Children always raise such an uproar when we have to keep them indoors. Worst part of running a day nursery the winter months.
Yes, ma'am, I suppose so.
Now, about your automobile, Miss Palmer, we understand you had it up for sale. You advertised one of the local newspapers, that right?
Yes, that's right. I ran one of those three-day want ads over the weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I thought I'd get more for my car if I sold it myself. I mean, instead of selling it to a used car lot.
Yes, ma'am. How many answers did you get on your want ad?
Well, just the one way it turned out. This man came out and looked at my car first thing in the morning. He offered to pay me exactly what I was asking for it, so I sold it to him. That's just the way it went.
Who was this man, Mrs. Palmer? Was he representing some auto company?
Yes, he said he was anyway. He gave his name as Joseph Newhall. I've got his card inside. He said he was a buyer for Dan Barton's used car lot on South Cap Street. Nicely dressed man. He made it all seem so honest.
How was the deal arranged? Could you tell us? I mean, transfer the car payment and so forth?
Well, he gave me a check for $50, sort of a down payment to hold the car for him. It was a certified company check.
I see.
He told me he'd be back that afternoon with a certified check for the full amount of the car, $800.
Did he take your car with him then?
No, he didn't. That's why I had no reason to be suspicious. He left me the check for $50 and said he'd be there with the money. Said in the meantime, one of the employees from the used car lot might be along to pick up the car to save me the trouble of driving it downtown myself.
Mm-hmm. Same M.O., Joe, all the way.
Yeah, looks like it. Well, how did it go after that, Miss Palmer?
This worker from the used car lot came to the house to pick up the car about 1 o'clock that afternoon. Gave me a check for the full amount of the car, and I gave him the pink slip. Had a pair of white coveralls on, lettering on the back of them. Dan Barton's used cars. Looked like a typical mechanic or something. I wasn't the least bit suspicious.
Mm-hmm. How about the buyer, this Joseph Newhall? Did he show up later in the day?
No, he never came back. I've never seen him since. Haven't seen my car either. I called that Dan Barton used car lot the next morning. They told me they never heard of Joseph Newhall. Just made me sick, officer. I can't afford to lose the money I had in that car.
Yes, ma'am, we understand. Same thing's happened to a dozen people like you around the city.
Do you remember what this man Newhall looked like, Miss Palmer? His physical description, maybe the clothes he was wearing?
Yes, I've got it all written down, Sergeant, in my diary. Would you like to step inside, please? I've got my little office at the back of the school here.
All right, thank you very much.
I always make a record of everything in my diary. I've kept one ever since I was a girl in college, every day.
I suppose you've got all the information on your car, the make, license number, things like that?
Oh, yes, indeed. I got everything together I thought might help you. Right up these stairs, please.
Thank you. Go ahead. How about the description of the man in overalls, the one who came to pick up your car? Would you remember him, ma'am?
Yes, I've got that for you, too. Everything I thought would help. Just have a seat there, officers. I've got the things in my desk here.
Thank you, Mr.
Right ahead. Thank you.
I wouldn't mind the whole thing so much, but as I say, I can't afford to lose the cash I had tied up in my car.
That seems to be the way the thieves operate, ma'am. They've been cheating the people who can least afford it.
Terrible thing, just out and out robbery. There you are, Sergeant.
Uh-huh. Thank you, ma'am.
There's the description of my car, license number, all the rest.
Yes, I see.
And here's the description of the two men, that Joseph Hall and Coveralls, who picked up my car.
Have you got that deposit check Newhall gave you, Ms. Palmer, the check for $50?
Right here, Sergeant. I saw that company about it, Dan Barton's used car lot. Forgery. Not worth the paper it's printed on.
Mm-hmm. I love you.
Yeah,
thanks. Same as the other.
One thing I don't understand, how those crooks get these checks to begin with. Did they steal them?
No, ma'am. We figured they had them printed up. We're still trying to find out where.
Well, you know what the men look like. You'll be able to find them now, won't you?
Only wish it worked that way, ma'am. We've had good descriptions on both men for a month now. Hasn't helped too much.
I don't understand it at all. As I say, they're only common crooks. They can't be that smart, can they?
Well, there's only one way we can judge. We've been hunting every day for a month now.
Yeah?
They're still... In the space of 33 days, the auto theft gang had victimized a dozen private citizens throughout the city. In each instance, the approach and the method of operation had been the same. The front man for the gang would personally answer a want ad inserted in a local newspaper by a private citizen advertising the sale of his automobile. The front man would represent himself falsely as a buyer for Dan Barton's used car lot, a well-known and legitimate used car dealer. He'd offer to pay exactly the sale price which the private party was asking. As a deposit, the so-called buyer would leave a counterfeit company check for $50 or $100 with a promise that he would return later in the day with a certified check for the full amount. After a few hours, another man posing as an employee of Dan Barton's used would call for the car and drive it away. Neither the car nor the so-called buyer were ever seen again. All efforts to trace them went for nothing. 11:40 a.m., Ben and I went back to the office and got out a broadcast and a supplementary APB on Mrs. Palmer's car and also on the phony car buyer who called himself Joseph Newhall. After lunch, we met with Sergeant Grimsby, one of the other four men out of auto theft detail who were working the case with us.
How'd you make out this morning, Army? That ain't going anywhere at all?
Wasn't bad as far as it went. We found the place where they had the printing done.
Yeah, where was that?
Small up in the valley. Printed up the phony checks with that heading on it, Dan Barton's used car lot. Got out some business cards for him, too.
What was the name? Did you find out?
Yeah, the same one, Joseph Newhall. He ordered the checks and the business card. The printer described him for us, same guy.
Where'd it go from there?
No place. The printer told us Newhall had a car. He couldn't give us a license number. Couldn't even remember the make or the body style. Thought it was a late model car, that's about all.
No, that's not much help.
No address on him either. It was a will call order paid for in cash.
That's if Newhall comes back, isn't
it? Yeah, it's covered. I don't figure there's much chance Newhall's going to do that. You ordered enough checks printed up the first time last of a year.
Well, I guess that's one lead we can forget.
Now, how about that special run the stats office made for us yesterday? Anything come out of that?
Nothing. All the possibles on the list were checked out. All of them clear. Nothing from Barton's used car lot either. Everybody on their staff's been checked out. All their ex-employees, too. No sign any one of them might have had a hand in it.
Yeah. Oh, either of you seen the captain since this morning?
No, why?
Well, that idea we were talking over at the last meeting, he figures we'll go ahead with it this weekend.
How's he figure on working, you know? I mean, personal contact?
Yeah, that's right. Most of the private parties who want to sell their cars themselves use that want ad deal over the weekend. They get a special ready Saturday and Sunday.
I know.
Thursday night's the deadline for having the ads in if they're going to run the full weekend. And that's when we start working on it.
We get in touch with every private party who's filed a want ad for the weekend advertising a sale of their car, huh?
Yeah, we'll contact them by phone, every one of them. We advise them that if anybody representing themselves as a buyer for Dan Barton's used car lot answers their want ad, they're to get in touch with us right away. If they can't stall the man long enough, we tell them to accept the information on the man the car is driving.
It ought to work out if we can get any kind of cooperation. It's going to be a big job. We'll have to cover all the want ads and all the papers.
We've got a good description of that phony buyer, Joseph Newhall. If they planted a want ad in one of the papers, maybe he's the one of the gang who brought the ad in. It's possible one of the ad takers might remember him. Might be worth checking anyway.
Well, could be. They might have phoned in the ad, too. That wouldn't help much.
Might as well snuff foolproof, but it's a different approach. It's a plan, anyway. We've tried everything else we can think of to reach the thieves.
I get it. Auto theft, body killing. Yes, sir. Mm-hmm. When was that? Thank you. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yes, as soon as we can. Thank you, sir. Well, maybe we won't have to wait for the weekend.
What do you mean?
A man out in Echo Park. He runs a candy store out there. He advertised his car for sale in this morning's paper. Said the first one to answer it was a buyer from Dan Barton's used car lot. Gave his name as Joseph Newhall.
Looks like the same M.O.
Mm-hmm. Then make a deal?
Well, the candy store owner wouldn't go for the deposit check. He wanted the full amount. Said the deal didn't sound right to him.
How does it stand now?
Well, Newhall said he'd come back with a check for the full sale price.
When?
8 o'clock tonight. 2:20 p.m. We drove out and questioned the candy store owner further. His description of Newhall tallied with the others, but again, the potential victim had failed to get any kind of a description of the car Newhall was driving or the license number. Ben and I staked out at the house. 8 p.m. came and went. The suspect failed to show. By midnight, there was still no sign of him. Well, the way it shaped up, Newhall apparently had a policy of making a deal at first contact or forgetting about it. He probably figured that if a person was at all suspicious, the interval would give him time to check, and Newhall wasn't giving away any odds. All day Wednesday, the stakeout went on. No sign of the suspect. On Thursday night, the local newspapers gave us lists of names and phone numbers of all private parties who had ordered want ads for the coming weekend to advertise the sale of an automobile. We divided up the names, and six of us took turns on the phones and started calling each party. We warned them about the car theft ring and advised them of what steps to take in the event Joseph Newhall or one of the other gang members approached them with the proposition to buy their car. One of the private parties we contacted was a Mr. Roy Harmon. Ben got on one and got in the thing we'd prepared. Sergeant Ormsby used the other extension and called another party running an ad.
Sergeant Ormsby, Los Angeles Police Department Auto.
How's that, sir? Yes, and one of the gang usually goes under the name of Joseph Newhall. Contacted it all. Right, thank you, sir.
What was that all about?
A man by the name of Harmon runs a cocktail lounge out on South Cole. He took in a check over the bar last night, company check from Dan Barton's used car lot. Says it was signed Joseph Newhall.
Well, he ought to remember who passed it.
He does. I got it right here. A man by the name of Frank Curtis is a regular customer at the bar. Harmon says this Curtis came in the place last night with a man in a dark suit, and the man seemed to be a friend of Curtis's.
Yeah.
Well, I asked him what the friend looked like, and he described him. It was Newhall.
Mm-hmm. What about that check business?
Harmon says he was standing bar at the time. Told me this Frank Curtis and Newhall had quite a few drinks together and they ran out of money. Newhall wanted to cash a check, but Harmon said no, he didn't know him.
Uh-huh.
Well, this Frank Curtis is a regular customer at the bar, and he offered to endorse the check for Newhall. So Harmon said okay, and he cashed it.
Well, how well does Harmon know this customer is, this Curtis?
Pretty well. He lives across the street from him.
We checked Frank Curtis through R&I, but he had no previous criminal record. We left the rest of the list for the other men, and Ben and I drove out and talked to Roy Harmon, the owner of the cocktail lounge where the suspect Joseph Newhall had cashed a check with the help of his friend, Frank Curtis. Harmon told the same story he'd given Ben over the phone. Curtis was a longtime neighbor of his and a steady customer at his cocktail lounge. As for Newhall, he'd never set eyes on him until the night before. Harmon gave us the home address of Frank Curtis, and we checked it out. Mrs. Curtis answered the door and told us that her husband Frank was working the newly inaugurated night shift at an aircraft plant in the south end of the city. Ben and I drove down to the plant, and after checking with the personnel office, we finally located Curtis at his work. He was an assistant foreman in one of the aircraft assembly shops.
It's the truth, Sergeant Romero. The last time I saw Newhall before the years ago. We used to work at a warp plant together. What's the matter, anyways? You done something?
We understand you endorsed a check of Newhall for $50. You know him that well? I mean, if you'd endorse checks for him?
Well, maybe I shouldn't have. Wife's always telling me I ought to be more careful who I'm signing checks for. Well, what happened anyway? Wasn't the check any good?
Do you have any idea where we could find this friend of yours, this Newhall?
Well, I don't know. During the war, he and his wife lived in this housing project off North Main. I know they moved from that place, though.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, old Joe didn't tell me where he was living. I gave him my address, told him to drop over for a beer sometime. Don't remember getting his address, though. Didn't tell me what this is about, huh?
Just a routine check. We'd like to locate Newhall, that's all. Got a few questions we'd like to ask him.
Sir, excuse me. We're going to watch it here, Sergeant.
Yeah.
Men coming through with that jig there. Okay, fellas, straight on through. All clear. Vertical fin assembly down the street. We're getting busy again, all right. Seems like the old swing shift days all over again. War years.
Yeah, you mentioned a minute ago that Newhall is married, Miss Curry.
Yeah, that's right.
What about his wife? Can you tell us anything at all about her?
Betty? No, I don't think so. Her and Joe seem to get along all right. Got along pretty well, matter of fact. Nice girl, Betty. I never minded her much.
The Newhalls have any children? You know that?
No kids. Both of them work, her and Joe.
Uh-huh. Would you know if Newhall's wife is still working?
I don't know. Probably is. But yeah, matter of fact, she is. Joe happened to mention it the other night when we were talking. Just happened to think of it.
No, go ahead. Well, I remember I asked about Betty, and he said she was still working. Same old place, same old job, that's all.
Where is this place she works, you know?
Yeah, City Hall.
We continued questioning Frank Curtis, and he told us that to the best of his knowledge, the suspect's wife, Betty Newhall, had a civil service rating and that she'd worked as a file clerk in the record room of one of the bureaus in the municipal. The next morning, Ben and I got in touch with the civil service officials at the City Hall. They got out a tracer on the wife of the suspect. 11:20 a.m.
I got it. Auto theft, Friday. Yes, sir? How's that? I didn't hear it. When? Yeah, I see. Yes, sir. Right. We'll check with you in about an hour. Bye. I don't know why we always have to do it the hard way.
Why? Well, what?
A call back on Newhall's wife. Most of it checks out just the way Curtis told us.
What's the rub?
Betty Newhall quit her job a month ago. Hasn't been around, hasn't been seen since. Civil service can't even contact her.
What's the deal?
She moved. No forwarding address, not a trace of her.
Exit Ball Road off the 57 freeway. Light up the holidays with a new vehicle from Anaheim Auto Center. We'll make your holiday dreams come true at Anaheim Auto Center with our incredible savings and huge discounts. Need some extra money for the holidays? Come to Anaheim Auto Center today and save thousands. We have a great selection of new vehicles and unbeatable service. Light up your holiday season today at Anaheim Auto Center. We want you to be completely satisfied. The holidays are the perfect time to buy a new vehicle. Why go anywhere else? We have it all at one convenient location near the Anaheim Pond. So light up your holiday season with a great new car or truck from Anaheim Auto Center.
Anaheim Auto Center, we're on the
floor. Exit Ball Road off the 57 freeway.
KNX 1070 News Radio.
Saturday, February 23rd. The strongest lead we'd had to the auto theft gang began to fade. Mrs. Betty Newhall, the wife of our principal suspect, wasn't to be found. We checked out all her known friends and relatives, the places she was known to frequent. There wasn't a trace of her. Ben got all the available information on her from the civil service office, and we got out a broadcast and the supplementary all-points bulletin. We found out she had a 10-year-old son, so we checked with the Board of Education to see if the boy was registered in one of the city's schools. He wasn't listed. Still no response. We stayed on it. In the meantime, the weekend was wearing past the halfway point. The other two teams of men working the case were standing by, but apparently none of the private parties who were running want ads over the weekend advertising the sale of an automobile had been approached yet by either Joseph Newhall or some other member of the gang. If they did make a contact, it hadn't been reported to us. Saturday night, still no response. 8:50 p.m. Ben and I had some supper at Johnny Coken's place, and then we went back to the office.
Not a bad meal at all, huh?
Pretty fair for a Saturday night. Good soup.
Yeah, there's nothing like that corn chowder Johnny puts out. It's the best.
I sure wish you'd do something about that coffee. It's like taking a shot of adrenaline, isn't it?
It is pretty strong, and... Excuse me. Maybe that's what's giving me this heartburn.
Where's Ormsby? I thought he was covering.
So did I. He was here when I left.
Joe, Ben?
Hi, Army. Thought we lost you.
I'm taking a call from Hollywood Division. Good piece of news.
What's that?
Newhall's wife. They found her.
At approximately 25 minutes past 8 that night, a dark-haired woman in her late 30s had brought a young boy into a pharmacy in the Hollywood area. Apparently, the woman had been drinking, but she was not intoxicated. The young boy with her, whom she identified as her 10-year-old son, was badly cut and bruised about the face and head. The woman insisted that the pharmacist on duty treat the boy and attend to his injuries. After arguing with the woman, the pharmacist called the Hollywood Receiving Hospital. An ambulance was dispatched, and the boy and his mother were there for treatment. At Hollywood Receiving, the woman gave her name as Betty Harrison, and her son's name is George Harrison. But a routine identification check by officers next door at the Hollywood Division Station disclosed her true name as Mrs. Betty Newhall. The desk sergeant ordered her held for interrogation and notified our office immediately. 9:30 p.m., Ben and I arrived at the Hollywood Division.
The boy George, Mrs. Newhall, how did he happen to get beat up like that? It's pretty bad for a little fellow.
I warned Joe about hitting little George. I told him if he did it again, I'd walk out. Well, I did walk out. I don't care what happens to him.
You mean the boy's father did that to him, beat him up like that?
He's not George's father. second marriage. My name used to be Donnelly. I have two kids. One died.
Uh-huh.
When the divorce came through, I got custody of George, and I married Joe Newhall.
You know why we're looking for your husband, Ms. Newhall?
Yeah, I think so.
Why do you think so?
Car business. I knew what he was doing.
Do you have any idea at all where we can find your husband?
I'm not sure. He might be a lot of places. Just can't get over what he did to George. No reason at all. Kid came home and asked if he could go to the show. Husband got up and slapped him. Been drinking quite a bit. He hit the kid with his closed fist, kept hitting. A grown man slugging a 10-year-old kid like that.
Yes,
I don't care about any man where George is concerned. Nobody's going to treat a kid of mine like that.
You said you knew about your husband's dealing in the car business, Mrs. Newhall. How much do you know about it?
I didn't have any part of it. I can tell you that much. It was his idea from the beginning, my husband's. Got the men together to work the racket. He made all the plans. He gave all the orders.
How is it you quit your job at the city hall in such a hurry?
My husband's idea, I guess. Thought if anything happened, he didn't want to be traced that easy. Then he had to go and get drunk that night, cash the check. He always did stupid things like that.
Mm-hmm. How about the gang your husband has working with him, Ms. Newhall? Can you tell us anything about them?
Yes, I can. Three fellows working with him I know of. Deadman and Curly Reese and Jack Whitmore.
Uh-huh.
Maybe there's someone else besides them, but I don't know of.
You know where these men live, ma'am? Where we can find them?
I think I do, yeah. I got the dresses at home. By this time, they're probably all there.
You know the places they were supposed to be staying.
Yeah, I got the addresses at home.
How about the cars they got on this deal they were working? What are they doing with them? Do you know that?
I don't know for sure. They were moving them east, I think, selling them back there.
Yes, ma'am.
I didn't always get said that the marriage of Joe Feehan could be for...
No.
Even they didn't like kids. They didn't want to have a home. Why'd they have to be that way?
Well, I'd like to ask you something, if I could.
Yeah.
Why'd you marry him? 10:43 p.m. We stopped at the Newhall apartment on the way back to the city hall, called the office, and arranged for a stakeout. The wife of the suspect, Betty Newhall, gave us the names and addresses of the people she knew to be working with her husband, Joseph Newhall, in the auto theft gang. She had no information to offer on the cars they might be driving. When we got to the office, we took a complete statement from Mrs. Newhall, and then she was booked in at the main jail on suspicion of grand theft auto. 11:09 p.m. Together with Wilson and Ormsby, we started checking out the addresses of the gang members. Our first two stops, we got nothing. On our last two, we did a little better. We picked up a Jack Whitmore, Curly Reese, and a Carl Stedman, three of the names which Mrs. Newhall had mentioned. We took them downtown and booked them in at the main jail. That still left the principal suspect, Joseph Newhall, unaccounted for. At 1:45 a.m. the next morning, we got a tip as to his whereabouts, a small hotel on East 1st Street. We checked it out. The man answering Newhall's description was registered in room 209 on the second floor. We got a pass key from the room clerk on duty and started up the stairs.
209. Down this way, Joe.
All right. Here's a 7. Here we are.
Mm-hmm.
See if we can get a rise, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, please.
Yeah, police officers. All right, hold it there, Mr. Down, Ben.
Yeah.
Hey, what is this? What's this all about?
You generally sleep with your clothes on, Newhall?
Look, I don't know what you're talking about. What is this, a shakedown?
He's clean, Joe. I'll check his bag.
All right, I'll stay out of those things. You haven't got any right breaking in here like this, going through my property.
Just relax, Newhall. It won't take long.
Two full pads of them, Joe. Find them in your suitcases. Company checks. Dan Barton's used car lot.
We talked to your friends, mister. We got one side of the story. You want to come downtown and give us yours?
You get nothing from me. Not unless I see my lawyer. You can't hold me on any charges.
Grand theft auto, Newhall. We've got the witnesses. We've got the evidence. If you've got something to say, say it. If you haven't, we'll get along downtown.
You haven't got anything on me. You haven't got enough to hold me an hour.
We're going to give it a try. For a full 5 hours, we questioned Newhall, both at the hotel and later downtown in the interrogation room. And after 5 hours of questioning, he finally broke and admitted being the mastermind behind the auto theft racket.
Your true name is Joseph Woodard Newhall, is that right?
Yeah, that's it. Now, you can't blame the whole setup on me, though. My wife had a hand in it just as much as I did.
Well, we've already got her statement. You want to give us yours?
And she's just as much to blame as I am. We didn't hurt anybody anyway. It's just a con deal, that's all. We didn't hurt anybody.
How do you figure that?
Well, just a simple con deal. People advertising their cars for sale are trying to cheat out a few bucks for themselves. We just outfigured them, that's all.
You ready to dictate a statement for us?
You know, we outfigured you two. You'd never have reached us if it wasn't for my wife.
We'd reach you.
Not in 30 years, you wouldn't. Where'd you go in circles? Just one hitch. My wife and that stupid kid of hers. Just because I slapped him around a little, I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for that.
Well, you better learn a lesson, mister.
Why?
Next time you fight, don't pick a 10-year-old.
story you have just heard was true. The names were changed to protect the innocent.
On May 29th, trial was held in Superior Court, Department 87, City and County of Los Angeles, State of California. In a moment, the results of that trial. A check of his fingerprints revealed that Joseph Newhall's true name was Joseph Orrin Henderson, and that he had a previous record of forgery and burglary in the state of South Carolina. Henderson, alias Newhall, was tried and convicted along with his associates in the auto theft gang on 8 counts of grand theft and forgery of a fictitious check. They received sentences as prescribed by law. Grand theft is punishable by imprisonment for not less than 1 or more than 10 years. Forgery of a fictitious check is punishable by imprisonment in the county jail for not more than 1 year, or in the state penitentiary for not more than 14 years. The wife, Betty Newhall, was convicted as an accomplice and was sentenced to serve 1 year in the county jail.
Ladies and gentlemen, our security and the peace of the world are in danger while hundreds of millions behind the Iron Curtain are victims of vicious lies about the United States and other free nations. Join the Crusade for Freedom through your local Crusade Committee or by writing to General Clay, Empire State Building, New York City. Make a contribution to its work. Help truth fight communism. Join the Crusade for Freedom.
You have just heard Dragnet, a series of authentic cases from official files. Technical advice comes from the Office of Chief of Police W.H. Parker, Los Angeles Police Department.
Fatima Cigarettes, best of all king-size cigarettes, has brought you Dragnet, transcribed from Los Angeles.
Once again, Sergeant Friday got his man. You're listening to Big Want Ad from the series Dragnet. The episode was first heard on Thursday, October 4th, 1951, on NBC Radio. Dragnet was a pioneer series because it was the first radio series to talk about sex crimes and crimes against children, something previous radio series had remained silent on. I'm afraid it's almost time to say goodbye for this week. But don't worry, I have 3 more weeks at the helm before I hand over the reins to your new host, James Colton. If you'd like to send me your feedback, you may email me at Corey, C-O-R-E-Y, at CFASFM.com. You may also write me at Old Part of Radio, 2880 15th Avenue, Prince George, B.C., Canada, Victor 2 Mike, 1 Tango 1. From the CFIS studios in Prince George, I'm Corey Walker. Have a great week.